I am Plato on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Food is such a part of our daily lives that a lot of us, unfortunately, don't take the time to think about what we consume. There are, of course, many ethical questions to consider as to food, where it comes from, and who or what's involved in getting it to us. A new book looks at how one person's thinking evolved as she went to being a vegan and then eating meat again, this time seeking out ethical meat, if you will. It's a great book in that we are taken across the United States to places where ethically sourced food can be had, slaughtered or hunted. Marissa Landrigan's work has appeared in numerous outlets, including The Atlantic and Salon. She is an assistant professor at the University of Pittsburgh, Johnstown, where she teaches creative, professional, and digital writing. She holds an MFA from Iowa State University. The Twitter handle is at MKLandrigan. The book is published by Greystone. Please welcome to the Planta on the Line program from Johnstown, Pennsylvania, Marissa Landrigan. Professor Landrigan, good morning.
Good morning, Joe. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. So what sort of childhood was it like for you growing up?
Oh, I had a really lovely childhood growing up. My mom's half of the family is Italian, and so food was really important to us. Food was really a place where we all came together. We had these group day-long cook fest. We made our own pasta and sauce. We all crowded around the dinner table to eat together. And so in that ways, it was really idyllic when it comes to food. But I also grew up in the suburbs, which meant that I was really removed from the source of my food. It wasn't until I was in college that I actually got a good look at what a modern farm actually looks like.
There's a wonderful sketch in the book where you're talking about these cooking sessions with your family, and how you'd all make pasta, but sort of the traditional way, if you will. But that also involved the North American experience of going to a Costco and getting everything in bulk.
Yes, absolutely. It was a real sort of interesting dichotomy between those two things. We used mostly canned tomato products when we made our tomato sauce. We used, you know, bulk purchased ground beef from Costco when we made our meatballs. And so we really were modern Americans in every sense of the word, with a little bit of Italian heritage pulled in.
Yeah, it can be isolating when we think about how we get our food, because, I mean, here in Vancouver, we have a Costco, but it's right in the middle of the city. And so a lot of urban folks use that as their source of food, rather than, say, and I'm assuming, and I hate to generalize, but I mean, not thinking about where the food comes from.
Right, absolutely. I think it's very common for people these days to be really disconnected from where their food comes from. We worked really hard to sort of industrialize North America, and unfortunately that involved really developing these urban centers and then suburban areas that sort of sprung up around those urban centers, which meant farms sort of got pushed further and further out away from the places where most people live. And so we just don't really that often get the chance to see where our food really comes from. And I think, unfortunately, that disconnect really plays out in the things we choose to eat.
Yeah, and so when, I mean, I guess that's part of why you became a vegetarian, right?
Yes, that's exactly right. When I was in college, I watched a video made by the organization PETA, the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, in one of my classes, and it was there that I saw the factory farm industry for the first time. I had this image in my head of what a farm looked like, and it was, you know, rolling green hills, lots of pasture, cows sort of wandering free, and I discovered when watching this video that that really wasn't how most farms actually functioned anymore in our sort of modern industrial foodscape. And what I saw in that video was truly horrifying. The animals are confined, of course. They're very badly mistreated. The process of slaughtering them is largely mechanized, which means that a lot can go wrong and it can cause a lot of suffering for them. And I was just horrified by what I saw. I thought it was incredibly gruesome. And I thought that I didn't feel right participating in that system. And so I decided to boycott it, essentially, to give up meat altogether.
And so you talk in the book about how you did that, and then you decide, I mean, how many years were you vegan or vegetarian?
I was vegetarian for about 7 years.
Yeah, and so the process from those 7 years to where we are today, say, what happened in this sort of evolution of your thinking?
Well, basically what happened was that I went from this sort of black and white thinking where meat production was a bad thing and therefore I had to sort of cut it out altogether to realizing that the picture of our modern day foodscape is a whole lot more complicated than that, that there were many other ethical considerations involved with how we raise and produce food that made it so that sometimes eating a vegetarian diet could be unhealthy or unsustainable or unethical, and sometimes eating meat can itself be ethical or sustainable. And so I realized that we just have a lot of gray area in our food system, and that really none of our dietary choices, whether vegan, vegetarian, or omnivore, eliminates any and all suffering, right? We are always, when we eat, responsible for some degree of suffering, whether human or animal. And the choice is not as simple, or not as black and white, as one where a vegetarian diet is always morally superior to eating meat.
In the 7 years that you were a vegetarian, did you miss meat at all?
You know, I did at first. It was difficult to cut it out at first, and I went cold turkey, quite literally. Uh-huh. Thanksgiving was the last meal that I ate meat, and so at first it was really difficult, especially because, you know, the people around me were still eating meat. I was in college at the time, eating in the dining halls, and so it would have been very easy to get meat. Everyone around me was still eating meat, and I also just really didn't have a sense for how to construct a meal without meat. I was really used to meat sort of being the centerpiece of the meal. And so for the first couple of years I was a vegetarian, at least, I ate really very unhealthy and unbalanced meals because I wasn't sure what to do with the gap that meat left.
Yeah. And speaking of gray areas, when you go for, say, the tofurkey or the whatever the processed stuff is that acts as meat, you found out in the course of writing this book that a lot of those sort of vegetarian or vegan processors are also owned by processors of meat.
That's right. That's right. As being vegetarian or vegan has become more popular, of course, the capitalist free market has done what it normally does and has sort of risen to meet that increase in demand, which means that large multinational food corporations are really getting in on the natural, organic, vegetarian brand. So, for instance, the Kraft Heinz Corporation owns both the Morningstar and Garden Burger brands of veggie burgers and meat substitute products. Kraft Heinz also owns the Oscar Mayer brand, which of course we know makes Oscar Mayer wieners, bacon, sausages, and other highly processed meat foods. So when you're spending your money buying Morningstar or Garden Burger, your food dollars are ending up in the same hands as they would be if you were purchasing Oscar Mayer wieners.
Marissa, why is it that the folks who are anti-meat, the animal rights activists, for example, why are they so prominent in the discourse and that they're championing that we all stop eating meat altogether?
Well, I think part of the reason is that that's just a really simple explanation. I think we all have the sense that there are a lot of ethical considerations in terms of how we eat and what we choose to eat. And that can be really overwhelming sometimes to consider all of those various different things. And so I think in many ways it's easy to just say, well, I'll cut this whole segment of a possible sort of diet out. I'll cut out all meat or I'll cut out all animal products. And to assume as a result of doing that, that means you're cutting out any suffering, that you're cutting out any implication you might have in causing harm to animals. But unfortunately, that's not the case. I think it's just sort of a quick fix or an easy solution, and it doesn't really work to change the number of other issues that are part of our food system.
Yeah, and so you take us in the course of this book to various places, the slaughterhouse, for example. What was it like going in there? Did you have any preconceptions as to what you might see, say?
I really wasn't sure what to make of it all. As I was working on the book and researching it and getting closer and closer to the source of my food, I sensed that I really needed to see a slaughter. My goal in the process of researching and writing the book and then going back to eating meat was to get closer to the source of my food. And so it felt like, to be honest in that, I needed to really see what it meant that an animal would die so that I could eat it. But I honestly had a really hard time doing it. Most large-scale and industrial slaughterhouses are absolutely closed. As I'm sure you and many of your listeners know, there are laws now across several states in the United States that actually ban people from filming in these places and that can make filming in slaughterhouses or industrial farms a crime. So these slaughterhouses really don't want people to see what's going on in them. And so as a result, I had a really difficult time getting into one. And so when I met Bartlett Duran, the owner of Black Earth Meats, where I was finally able to see a slaughter, it really took me by surprise how open he was about it. I was talking to him about his slaughter process, and I asked him if he could explain to me step by step what actually happened. And he said, well, why don't you just come and watch? It's a lot easier to understand that way. And he gave me a card, and 3 days later, there I was. So I didn't really go into it with a whole lot of preconceived notions because I was just taken by surprise that I was finally able to do it at all.
Yeah, and so after seeing what you saw, did it make it, I don't know if comfortable is the right word, but I mean, did you feel that, yeah, I can eat some meat as long as I know where it's from and know the process by which it's gotten?
It really did have that effect on making me feel like I had sort of made the right decision, because I saw, by being able to see the process of slaughter, I could sense for myself that it felt right. I saw the people who worked there being very mindful, very careful, and very intentional with the way that they were processing the animals. They process only one animal at a time from start to finish to sort of focus all of their attention on that animal, to sort of eliminate the possibility of fear in the other animals that are about to be slaughtered. Mm-hmm. There was a sign hanging on the wall of the slaughterhouse floor that said, "We honor these animals, for by their death we gain life." And I didn't have a lot of expectations, but I certainly hadn't expected something that sort of spiritual and respectful in a slaughterhouse, on a slaughterhouse floor. So standing there watching this happen, it didn't feel wrong. It felt like everyone involved understood that they were part of a sort of a ritual, really, of feeding each other, and they understood the sacrifice that the animal was making as part of that.
And so, I mean, you went to one place, and I'm sure we can find places like this throughout Canada, throughout the United States. But a lot of the meat that we do eat doesn't come from such an ethical place. So what do you advise, say, the reader, or the reader of your book, as to the sort of places they should seek in terms of getting their food?
Well, I found that the one of the easiest things to do for most people is to see if they can find local sources for their food, whether that's meat or dairy or even just produce. Mm-hmm. Whether this means going to the farmer's market or joining a community-supported agriculture program, or even just finding a locally owned butcher shop or grocer, the closer you can get to the source of the food, the better. In addition to that food just being fresher and tasting better, you know you're supporting your local community and your local economy, but ultimately getting closer to the source of your food allows you to see the way the farm is run, allows you to see the conditions in which the animal is raised, to see the conditions in which the workers for the farm harvest the food and the way that they're treated and paid. And that allows you to decide for yourself if this particular food system feels right to you.
So did you notice any difference in terms of when you went vegetarian cold turkey and when you went back to eating meat again? Differences in the day-to-day, say your health even?
You know, I really did, and in a really interesting way. As I said earlier, when I first became a vegetarian, I was in college still, and so I'd never really lived and cooked on my own. I'd come from my parents' house into the college dining halls, so when I moved out on my own as a vegetarian, I really didn't have a clear sense of how to sort of cook and eat healthy meals. And as a result, I was really relying very heavily on these fake meat substitute products to sort of fill in that space that meat had left. Yeah. And I was eating a lot more starches and carbohydrates, a whole lot of mac and cheese and ramen noodles and that sort of thing. And so I didn't eat a really well-balanced, healthy diet. Now, going back to eating meat, sort of conversely, really actually made me sort of diversify my food habits. I joined a community-supported agriculture program to allow myself to buy the kind of locally sourced, grass-fed meat that I wanted. And as a result, I also had access to local fresh produce, which also meant that I had to learn to try more things, to try new things. I was learning to cook meat for the first time, and so I also learned how to cook a lot of other vegetables that I'd never bothered to try and figure out how to cook when I was a vegetarian. And so I really did notice myself with a sort of a more well-balanced diet when it incorporated meat, not necessarily because it incorporated meat, but because I'd reframed my thinking so that I was being more mindful and intentional about my food choices.
Yeah. When people hear about, you know, making a change in one's lifestyle, one's diet, one worries that it'll cost a lot to get, say, grass-fed, free-range, or ethically sourced meat, food, vegetables, and the sort. Is it much of a leap, say, in terms of the pocketbook?
It unfortunately still is. It is more expensive to eat this particular kind of meat, but also a recent study from the Harvard School of Public Health actually showed that just eating a balanced, healthy diet, one that focuses primarily around food, nuts, fish, and that kind of thing, actually costs more than eating a diet made primarily of processed foods and industrial meat. Those are the foods that, unfortunately, we've sort of chosen to subsidize and support. And so I think that while it can be a little bit more expensive now to buy these kinds of meat, to buy fresh or local or organic produce, the more those things gain in popularity, the more we'll see the price tag begin to drop. Gradually, demand for these things, I think, is increasing, and the more that happens, the cheaper it will be to produce, the more producers will sort of shift models in that direction as well. So I think it can be a little bit more expensive to begin, but I also think there are ways to mitigate that cost. For instance, I don't usually eat meat every day anymore, even though I now do still eat meat as part of my diet. I've learned to use smaller portions of meat or to find a way to make, say, one grass-fed steak stretch across several meals, make sort of something that doesn't center meat in the meal. And that allows me to sort of balance the increased expense with also just having an overall healthier diet.
Yeah. Is this for you for the long haul? I mean, in terms of the choices you'll make in terms of what you'll eat?
Yes, I think so, absolutely. It's not always easy, and I sometimes have to be flexible and forgiving. You know, you can't always make a perfect choice all the time. But I do really feel like this is the best choice, not just for myself and for sort of my immediate family, but I also feel like these models of farming are the best choices for the environment in the long run, mm-hmm. The best choice for sort of our collective health, the best choice in terms of fair labor standards and practices, and ultimately the best choice when it comes to animal welfare.
This is an important book in terms of the subject matter and what it'll change for our consumption and in the discourse as to what we discuss and to what's important to us with regards to our food. But it's also a very personal book because you talk about, I mean, I started the conversation today about your family background because that's how you start the book. What's it been like to look back at, say, the person that you are, that you've become?
Well, it's a really fulfilling opportunity, honestly. It's one of the perks of being a writer, if you sort of get to chronicle your journeys in this way. There are some things, of course, when I look back on, I sort of shake my head at or roll my eyes at. I certainly understand from where I am now that I could have done a much better job eating a vegetarian diet, that I could have been more adventurous when it came to trying more vegetables, that I could have learned how to be a better cook and balance my meals more. I also had some, you know, distance from my family for a while as a result of my vegetarianism because I sort of had taken it as this very political stand that I was taking sort of an opposition to them. And I now understand that ultimately I've ended up in a very similar place to where I started, understanding that food is a way to connect to your community, to the land, to the people you care about and to your family. And ultimately, that's what we were doing there when we were making pasta together in my childhood kitchen.
It's a beautiful book in a lot of places, and I appreciate your time today.
Thank you so much for having me, Joe.
You're very welcome. It's a fascinating book, and it's a really good book as a read, and I'm sure people listening to this will find it engaging, just as it's important. The book is called The Vegetarian's Guide to Eating Meat, A Young Woman's Search for Ethical Food. It's published by Greystone. Its author, Marissa Landrigan, joined me on the line from Johnstown, Pennsylvania, in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plata.